You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Sometimes I feel like a broken MP3 player. Almost every pet I see in an office call is being presented for itching, biting, and scratching. Pet owners always want to blame skin issues on fleas. But with the advent of advanced flea control medication, fleas are almost a parasite of the past. So why are these pets and the people who love them so miserable? What are the causes? And more importantly, what can be done to safely and effectively give them some relief? My usual guests on the show are veterinarians, but other professionals also address the health concern of dogs and cats. Biochemists, for instance, are intricately involved. Dr. Mervyn Levine holds a PhD in biochemistry and is the president of Spectrum Labs. We'll be right back after the short break to talk about itchy, bitey, scratchies, and what you can do. Stay tuned.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Buster, you're telling me my dog food products can't go on your shelves?
That's right. Didn't pass one of my Petco certified nutrition checklists. Sorry, Wayne.
Who made these checklists?
Geniuses. Very smart guys.
Well, it's good enough for most grocery stores.
Do you see cheese puffs on my shelves? Mayonnaise? Soda pop?
No.
That's because I ain't running no grocery store, Wayne. Your pets will get better nutrition, I guarantee it. Petco, where healthy pets go.
Enter the code DR10, DOCTOR, the number 10, and get 10% off any order. No minimum at Petco.com.
I play tennis because I love to. But inside, I want to win. Take away the court, the net. I might not be a player, but I'll always be a competitor. Lady Foot Locker understands that.
Lady Foot Locker, the first to carry Adidas off-court shoes and the gear that goes with them.
If you play your best, there's no regret.
Lady Foot Locker, one place, every woman.
Go to ladyfootlocker.com and enter the code AFDOC1LF to get 10% off any order of $50 or more. Or enter the code AFDOC2LF to get 15% off any order of $75 or more at ladyfootlocker.com.
How would you like your business to reach out and invite in our audience? We have a brand new trademark concept called InfoSeeds. InfoSeeds are short 20-second seeds of information about your place of business, practice, or service. It's the best, most cost-effective way to invite us in. We only have a limited number of slots left. For more information, visit the website
PetLifeRadio.com.
Click on sponsorship information. There you can listen to a sample of InfoSeed. Remember, only a limited number of opportunities are available.
Coast to coast and around the world, it's O-Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. O-Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand, this is the place for a special paparazzi treat. Only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Levin, thank you so much for being with us. As I said, allergies are so common.
They absolutely are, and they are on the increase. Several theories to that, but primarily it appears that as we clean up our environment, we make ourselves more susceptible to allergies. And that's why we're seeing an increase rather than a decrease as time goes by.
Huh. So these people, and I'm not crazy, I really am seeing more allergic pets. It used to be just here in Southern California, like a summertime phenomena, and now it's year-round.
Right, right. It's the thing about allergies is that they're cumulative. And years ago, we used to think, okay, if a patient had allergies in the summer, then they were likely just to be allergic to the inhalants, the pollens, the trees, etc. They are, however, just as likely to be allergic to foods and other substances which they have year-round. Now, in the summer, when they're exposed to the combination of foods and the pollens in the environment, that throws them over their threshold and they become symptomatic. In the winter, very often, even though they're eating foods that they may be allergic to, but they're not exposed to the pollens, then they are less likely to show symptoms or more likely to be below their threshold.
Hmm. So how did a biochemist get involved with allergies? Back up 2 seconds.
Well, that's a long story, probably longer than we have on the show here today. But when I moved to the United States 25 years ago, I started up with a company that was just getting going in allergy testing. In fact, it was the first company in the world to do serum allergy testing for dogs, and worked with them for a couple of years until that partnership went by the way. And I in turn then started Spectrum Labs in 1989. So it was somewhat fortuitous, being in the right place at the right time, having the right background, and always having had an interest in pets.
So here we have probably a question a lot of people will ask. So what exactly is an allergy, Dr. Levin?
You know, an allergy is nothing more than the misidentification by the body of a relatively normal substance. So, for example, if you take Bermuda grass, to the majority of us, Bermuda grass is just a normal thing we inhale, and our body takes care of it. The individual that has a predisposition to allergy, however, their immune system makes this misidentification as this Bermuda grass pollen enters the body and sees it as a harmful substance and alerts the rest of the immune system, which sets off this chain reaction, ultimately resulting in symptoms. So nothing more than an overzealous immune system misidentifying a normal substance.
And it seems as though pets, thankfully, most of the time, don't have the severe allergic reaction as a person would. For instance, a friend of mine, she has anything with nuts in it. She starts getting the very tight throat, and if she eats too much, she can end up in the hospital. It doesn't seem as though pets have that type of severe reaction, at least to these inhaled or contact allergies or eaten allergies or consumed.
No,
is that correct?
Right, they do not. The most severe anaphylactic reaction that I've seen in the event of food is maybe some severe diarrhea and or vomiting. However, they don't show those dramatic symptoms. And the primary reason is that dogs and cats will manifest their symptoms very different to humans. Now, in the case of cats, there are some in rhinitis and asthma-type issues. But for the most part, and particularly in dogs, we're talking about dermatological symptoms. So we're talking about skin infections, areas where they scratch, they induce areas of infection, they introduce bacteria into those areas that they've scratched open. And it's often these secondary infections that alert us to the problem. Another thing is constant feet licking and chewing because they get irritation called dermaperditis. And they also, and that's very often a result of food allergies. And then they have ear problems. So not these acute symptoms that you would see in human allergy, but it's more of a long-term chronic issue.
I see so many of these little, especially the white dogs that come through the door, the Bichons, the poodles, and they might be white other than their little paws, it looks like they stepped in chocolate. So
exactly. So they've been licking those paws away, and basically they've changed the pigmentation there. But essentially, that's just from constant licking it from it's saliva staining more than anything else that's caused that. And you'll also find that these white dogs will sometimes have areas on their body where the hair looks slightly discolored or slightly brownish patches, and while it's not always allergy, very often those are manifestations of allergic skin disease or atopy.
You were talking about pets having food allergies, and they may be eating a food they're allergic to during the winter and not having any issues with it. So many clients, you know, my breeder has said that you can't feed a Labrador anything that has soy in it. Or somebody else who has a boxer says, oh, yes, and my breeder says it can't be anything that contains corn, or they go to these raw diets. I'd love to have you address food allergies, and when you see it, just go for it. Go crazy. Tell me about food allergies.
Well, as far as food allergies, there is no single golden rule. Now, there are certain breeds which are more predisposed to allergies in general, like the English Setters and the Terriers and the Bulldogs, to name a few Dalmatians. They have a higher preponderance towards allergy. However, we can't say that a specific breed is allergic to a specific type of food. So allergies are, for the most part, genetic, inherited from the parent. And what we inherit from our parents is the tendency to develop allergies, or more likely, the tendency to build antibodies to these so-called foreign substances. However, what we don't inherit from our parents is what we're allergic to. So we'll often have, for example, a veterinarian that'll call us and say he has littermates, two or three littermates, all showing signs of allergy. Can he test for one and apply the treatment to all three? And usually the case is no, because they'll be very, very different in their in what they've actually developed allergies to. So they've got this overzealous sensitive immune system, but we don't know which direction it's going to take. So to say that a particular breed can't eat a particular type of food is somewhat misleading without actually having either done an elimination diet and seeing which foods they can or cannot eat based on a trial of elimination, or of a simple blood test, which will say that this patient is allergic to the following foods. And in the case of our lab, we would then provide a list and say, here are the foods available on the market free from what your pet is allergic to. Basically, it's a shopping list that they can use to buy so-called hypoallergenic diets for their patients or for their pets. And I'll address this issue of hypoallergenic. And you sometimes see a diet marketed as hypoallergenic, and there really is no such thing as a hypoallergenic food. Hypoallergenic just simply means that it's not allergic or allergenic to that particular patient. So years ago, we used to call lamb and rice hypoallergenic foods. And the simple reason for that was that dogs in the U.S. prior to that stage were very seldom fed lamb and or rice as ingredients. So having not been exposed to them, they didn't develop allergies. We saw more and more lamb and rice diets come on the market. The fad caught on of this hypoallergenic lamb and rice. And today, truthfully, we see as many lamb and rice allergies as we do to any other food ingredient.
Unless, of course, you had lived in New Zealand at that time, and then it would probably have been beef and just the opposite for
Absolutely.
Here in the U.S.
I have an interesting anecdote on that, because I was giving a seminar to our Australian office way back in the early 90s, and I showed the list of foods that we tested, and in those days we did not test for lamb and rice because we considered them to be hypoallergenic. And at that point, the veterinarian, one of the veterinarians in the audience said, well, why aren't you testing for lamb and rice? And I said, because they're hypoallergenic. And he said, no, they're not. It's kangaroo that's hypoallergenic. And that was when the penny dropped, and we started realizing that it's based on exposure and not any particular type of food. There's no reason why any particular type of food, being a protein, should be less allergenic than others.
And is it typically the protein, the carbohydrate, or the fat that these dogs and cats are sensitive to?
For the most part, it's the protein. There is somewhat of a carbohydrate moiety that causes the issue as well. For example, we can see allergies to rice and we can see allergies to potato. Yes, there's small amounts of protein, but it's more likely the carbohydrate moiety in there. But for the most part, allergies are manifested towards the amino acid sequences that make up proteins. So when the body is confronted with an allergen, it sees sequences of amino acids. Doesn't necessarily say this comes from Bermuda grass. So it'll see a sequence of amino acids and respond accordingly and produce an antibody against that specific substance. So if the body is, if an individual has inhaled Bermuda grass, the body would produce a Bermuda grass specific antibody. Now, one of the things as well is that because the body doesn't see the allergen as a whole, it sees chains of amino acids, we see a lot of cross-reactions. And some of them are very, very classic. For example, an individual that cannot eat watermelon is likely also allergic to ryegrass.
That seems very much associated, watermelon and ryegrass. Okay, they're both plants. All right.
Right. One you eat and one you inhale. Another one, for example, is hazelnuts and latex, just regular rubber gloves. So
that
there's some very diverse cross-reactions out there as a result of just the protein sequences being presented to the immune system rather than the allergen as a whole.
So that is why some pets can have these hydrolyzed diets, and they're doing okay because the protein sequence is broken up in a different fashion?
Well, no. That gets a little bit more complicated because the mechanism of an allergy reaction is that when two antibodies bind to the mast cell in the body, and the mast cell is the cell that contains histamine, amongst others, which causes the allergy symptoms. So these two antibodies would bind to that mast cell at a fixed distance apart. And the average allergen is far larger than that distance apart, but the allergen wants to bind to those antibodies and kind of pushes its way in and causes the mast cell to rupture because it's pushing itself into a space that's smaller than it can accommodate. So the only way it can do it is by prying it open. In the case of hydrolyzed, the process of hydrolysis reduces the average protein molecule size to below 50 microns, and the average distance between these two antibodies is 50 microns. So the allergen that's presenting itself to the mast cell can bind to these antibodies without causing the mast cell to rupture, and therefore we don't get symptoms. We're still seeing the protein, and we're still seeing the protein sequences, and we're still producing antibodies, but we're not seeing this cross-linking effect, which is resulting in the mast cell degranulating.
Another concern that people will have is they'll come in and we'll start talking allergies, and I'm trying to get a background of where has it been living, what's it been eating, and say, oh, well, I've tried all these various foods, so I know it can't be a food allergy because I've fed a beef-flavored food and then a chicken one, and then this one is a fish one, but I still am very incredulous and say, I still think it's food allergy. Can you address changes in types of food or flavors of food?
Yes. Unfortunately, we don't always know what's in a food type. And just because it's a beef-based food doesn't mean that it's beef, pure beef and nothing else. So there will be other allergens in there as well. And it might be the soy, it might be corn, it might be wheat, it could be anything else that's used in the makeup of that same food. So, we can go to limited ingredient diets and do an elimination basis. So we know that there's only the major proteins in these limited ingredient diets. And we can try the various combinations until we find the one that works. Now, that reminds me of a situation we had a number of years ago where I had a call from a veterinarian who said, we've tried beef and rice, lamb and rice, chicken and rice, eggs and rice, and just cannot find the answer. And he sent it in for testing, and lo and behold, it was positive to rice. And once they removed rice from the diet, these symptoms abated very quickly. Because the thing about food allergies is their onset is pretty quick, but they're just as quick to dissipate. So if you remove the foods from the animal's diet, It could be as soon as a couple of weeks before you see results, but certainly not longer than 4 to 6 weeks, and very often a lot sooner that you're going to see improvement.
What's the typical age of onset for a food allergic pet?
That's difficult, but it's a lot younger than the typical age of onset for other allergies, because the pet is being, allergies are based on exposure. You can only be allergic to something if you've been exposed to it on a continual basis or on a repeating basis. So these animals are being fed the same diet basically 365 days a year, and they're being exposed to these foods at a very young age. And it's not uncommon to see a six-month-old dog with allergies to food. Now, we will test that dog, and we will very often see decent results by just changing the diets. What I discourage is people doing a test for inhalant allergies, in other words, for the trees, the grasses, the pollens, the indoor things, until the animal is at least 18 months to 2 years of age, because it takes that long for a patient to develop their own allergy profile, particularly less so in Southern California where you are, but in areas of the country where there's a distinct summer and winter, they're only exposed to these pollens for a short time of the year, and therefore they have to go through a couple of pollinating seasons before they develop their allergy profile. So as a hard and fast rule, I'd say if an animal presents with feet licking and chewing and maybe irritation in the rump area and or otitis or ear infections, and the veterinarian having ruled out other possibilities that could cause similar such symptoms, such as endocrine issues like thyroid and cortisol, and made sure that we've got rid of any fleas should they be there, and that if there is secondary staph infection, bacterial infection introduced by the scratching, that we've got those under the control. If we can then say, okay, we've ruled out all the other issues, now it appears to be an allergy, it's a six-month-old, let's look at the food picture. Unfortunately, when we test a patient that young, yes, we can give them some immediate relief, but usually within a couple of years, the profile will change as they become exposed to more and more things. So an animal that's tested at 6 or 7 months or 8 months of age usually is looking at being retested again at about 2 or 3 years once they're fully developed the allergy profile.
Wow. We're talking right now with Dr. Levin, and he is the president of Spectrum Labs. We're just scratching the surface of this very difficult to determine problem, allergies in pets. So stay tuned through this short commercial. We'll be right back to talk more about itching, biting, and scratching. Stay tuned.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Love your pets but wish their medications were a lot less expensive? They are at 1-800-PETMEDS. You'll not only save on flea and heartworm medications, but on prescriptions for arthritis, incontinence, thyroid, and more. And you get fast service, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, our licensed pharmacists ensure accuracy, monitor drug interaction, and more. See why over 5 million people have trusted their pet's health to 1-800-PETMEDS, America's largest pet pharmacy. Call now or order online.
Go to PetMeds.com/doctor, DOCTOR, to get 10% off any order and free shipping on orders of $39 or more at PetMeds.com.
Whether they're big, small, hairy, or whatever, you're going to need gear for your feet. And Kids Foot Locker's got all the great shoes and gear that'll get you in the game.
Go to kidsfootlocker.com. Enter the code AFDOC1KF to get 10% off any order of $50 or more. Or enter the code AFDOC2KF to get 15% off any order of $75 or more at kidsfootlocker.com.
And cover those funky feet.
FTD's network of over 40,000 florists around the world have been creating beautiful handcrafted arrangements for 100 years. Each arrangement is delivered the same day and backed by FTD's 7-day satisfaction guarantee. For a century, people have trusted their most important occasions to the flower experts at FTD.
Since Pet Life Radio is all about puppy dogs and flowers, our listeners, that's you, can get a 20% discount on your order. Just go to florop.com and use the code DR20 at checkout. FLEUROP.com, code word DOCTOR and the number 20.
Hi, everybody. I'm Megan Blake here with my sidekick, Super Smiley, the giant mutt and spokes dog for throwaways. You're listening to Pet Life Radio, and I'd like to tell you about our brand new show, A Super Smiley Adventure. Our show explores adventures with animals. They can be traveling, out in the world trips, or inner journeys where our animals lead us to inspiration and self-discovery, or just plain fun adventures. Join us here on Pet Life Radio on A Super Smiley Adventure. Good boy.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Levin, thank you very much. This is such an important subject. We've been talking about food allergies in particular, and I know there's a lot of controversy around testing for food allergies. Now, at Spectrum Labs, the type of testing that you conduct is from a blood test, correct?
Correct. That's correct. It's a test that measures antibodies, and it measures a specific antibody called IgE, which is involved in what we call type 1 hypersensitivity reaction or an anaphylactic allergic reaction. That is really any allergic reaction that involves IgE. And the literature, and quite correctly, says that there are other issues. There's a type 2, there's a type 3, and a type 4 allergic reaction, which are non-IgE mediated, which could and are causing the same issues. We have found, though, anecdotally, a significant difference in the improvement of patients where we just test for inhalants and maybe try some food elimination diets, and then we treat the inhalants with allergy injections, hyposensitization as we call it, versus those patients that we test for inhalants and foods and we hyposensitize and change the diet according to the results. In fact, the difference in response is about a 15%. The 15% more will respond when we do both combined. We had a very interesting situation when we launched our services in Japan, where we have a very large market. And unfortunately, after launching, we found out that the Japanese government would not allow us to do hyposensitization until we were regulated and registered by their criteria. And in a period of a year, after testing multiple thousand animals, the only thing we could do was change the diet, because we didn't have hypersensitization as an option. And this was a perfect opportunity, having 15, 16,000 patients, to go back to the veterinarians and say, okay, you changed the diet. What kind of response did you see? And we scored those responses. Because what I saw during the course of that year is that the same veterinarians were sending samples in over and over again. And it struck me, something must be working. And we can't hypersensitize, so diet change must be having some effect. Otherwise, they wouldn't be sending samples again. And when we actually surveyed them at the end of a year, we found that 57% of them had in fact improved by just changing the diet alone. And that diet change was based purely on the results of our SPOT test. Now, there's some criticism as to whether the SPOT test or any blood test will show some false positive results to foods, and that's absolutely quite true, and it's quite possible. However, it's been well documented that as far as the negative results, it's an excellent indicator. So we call it the most restrictive diet to start with, and then if that diet becomes too limiting, or it's that particular brand of food is too expensive, or the animal won't eat it, or there's no combination of commercial foods and the owner has to cook at home or feed raw ingredients, then by all means we can go back to the results and challenge some ingredients, like one back at a time, and see if there's any results. Now, if we challenge back chicken, for example, and the animal doesn't respond, then one of two things has happened. Either the chicken was a false positive, which is possible, or more likely the chicken is still, even though you're feeding them chicken plus the two other ingredients that they were allowed to eat, the chicken is still keeping them below the threshold. So we don't know what that threshold point is. You could be allergic to five or six foods, and you may be able to eat three of them without having to eat any other. There's an interesting case in the human literature which elucidates this issue with food allergy and threshold, and there was a patient who showed up allergic to beef and to milk, and he could really eat beef any time and all the time without having any symptoms. Likewise, he could drink milk any time and all the time without having symptoms. However, as soon as he had the two together, he had an immediate allergic reaction. So that shows that the beef on its own wasn't sufficient to put him over the threshold, and the milk on its own wasn't sufficient to put him over the threshold, but the combination put him over the threshold, and he had a severe anaphylactic reaction.
Hmm. So McDonald's and a malt is not a good idea for that person.
Oh, absolutely not. So food allergies, yes, are controversial, but we have tested in excess of a million dogs in the last 25 years and treated them. And we have a multitude of doctors who, in fact, only test for foods because they're happy with it. Now, there are those who will only test for inhalants. But the ones that are getting the highest success rate are the ones that are testing for inhalants, hypersensitizing accordingly, and testing for foods and changing the diet accordingly. And we've shown that over and over again with anecdotal studies.
Well, speaking of testing, I remember as a child, and I have allergies, and you're talking about Bermuda grass. When they cut the grass in my area, oh yes, my eyes start to water, and if I sit on it, total itchies. But as a child, I was allergy testing with the injections under the skin, which was not fun. And thankfully now there's testing such as you have. Please explain what goes on. So I am a pet owner. I think my pet has itchies, cat or dog. Can I take it to my veterinarian, and what do they do?
Okay, well, one of two things. I mean, you could take it to a specialist who will do an intradermal skin test, and in the right hands, you know, because it's somewhat of a subjective test, the intradermal skin test can yield good results as long as the individual knows exactly what they're looking for and how to read it. The problem is it's a lot more traumatic, as you yourself can attest to. We need to shave a larger area of the skin. The animal usually needs to be sedated. And then we inject small amounts of every allergen into the skin or subcutaneously to be able to to be able to see if there's a result or not. Now, those results are somewhat subjective and obviously to the trained eye less so than others. But with the advent of the blood test, any veterinarian can now simply draw a couple of cc's of blood, send the serum into the lab, and within 24 to 48 hours have a report form in front of them showing exactly what the animal is allergic to, what hypersensitization is recommended, if it is recommended, and what diet change needs to be undertaken if it is recommended.
So now I get this report. It shows that a pet is allergic to various types of, or maybe I should ask, what are some of the most common allergens?
Certainly the trees and the grasses are more common than some of them. For example, molds, although mold allergies are very common, but some of them are more potent than others. And Bermuda grass and rye grass and ragweed are amongst the more potent. But we see across the board pollens, we see molds, we see animals being allergic to other animals in the house. If there's birds in the house or if there's a cat in the house, in the case of a dog, we see them allergic to the other pets in the house. House dust is one of the biggest. It's not actually the house dust itself, but it's the mites that live within the dust. They're a very potent allergen. Fleas, as you mentioned, food, and even ourselves, because we also give off dander, and pets can be allergic to our dander, so they can be allergic to their human owners.
So it's sometimes people say, well, I have to get rid of my cat because I'm allergic to it. Now the pet can say, I need to get rid of my human because I'm allergic to it. Well, if you wanted a divorce, here's a good reason. Say, no, I'm sorry, pet's allergic to you.
Well, that's an easy custody situation to fix. Fortunately, there is a fix, and that fix is the process of hypersensitization. So we can gradually give injections to the pet over a nine-month period. And these are very simple injections, which the owner gives at home because they're just given subcutaneously. It's just into almost into a muscle just below the skin. And a very, very simple injection. And the animal then becomes desensitized to what it was previously sensitive. So if the animal was sensitive, if the dog was sensitive to the cat in the house, and we include cat dander in the hypersensitization, then we render the animal desensitive or desensitized to the cat dander. So now it can be exposed and amongst the cats without having a problem. So for those people that have been trying to use getting rid of the cat as an excuse, unfortunately, it no longer holds true.
So I can't use to get rid of the husband. Okay, I'll remember that. Now, are there any dangers? I know there are times, and I've had some pets that are undergoing desensitization, and they say, I give this injection, and my pet is much more itchy right after I give it. And I'll usually say, well, that's a good sign in a way, because it shows that, yes, this is something the pet is then sensitive to. It's proving.
Absolutely. And the most important thing is that the clients are educated as to that fact, because the hypersensitization schedule, which we follow, is a nine-month schedule, gradually increasing the dosage and then increasing the concentration along the way as well. And that schedule will work effectively in about 90% of the cases. The other 10%, all that's happening is that they may have a different threshold. So, for example, at one particular dosage, the pet does fine and may even be showing significant signs of improvement. And then as soon as we give the next dosage, the symptoms get worse almost immediately. And that's, as you say, a good sign because it shows we've got the right allergens in there to cause a reaction. But all it means is that we've exceeded the threshold, and we would then encourage the veterinarian to call our technical staff, who, after asking a series of leading questions, would ascertain whether it is in fact a reaction related to the injection, whether they're too close together, too far apart, whatever the case may be, and adjust the schedule accordingly. And we would bring the dosage down below what we've now found to be the threshold and gradually build it up until we can go past that. Some pets never get beyond a certain point. This is a three-vial series, with the third vial being the most concentrated, and there's a percentage that never get out of the second vial, a smaller percentage that never get out of the first vial, and an even smaller percentage, but they do exist, that are at a 1 to 10 dilution of the first vial and do just great. So you asked a two-part question. That's the second part. The first part is, are there any dangers associated with hypersensitization? And the answer is no, it's perfectly safe. And the reason we're giving hypersensitization is because it's a safe alternative to the other alternative of handling the symptoms, and that's the use of corticosteroids, which most people now recognize has long-term side effects and will shorten the patient's life. So any reaction, should it occur, is usually just going to be a slight increase in symptoms. Very, very infrequently will we find a major anaphylactic reaction, such as vomiting and or diarrhea at the same time. And usually that's going to occur within hours of the injection. So if the patient has an injection and 3 days later there's something else going on and there's increased scratching, it's unrelated, or most likely unrelated, to the injections, because these anaphylactic reactions occur immediately after the injection. And I don't want to scare people with the use of the word anaphylactic, because we typically think of anaphylactic as, you know, roll over, feet up in the air, and foaming at the mouth. And really, anaphylactic is just means that it's an IgE reaction going on. And
an immediate reaction.
Immediate reaction. Now, what you will find sometimes is that if you're at a point in the schedule where the injections are once a month, and the animal may do great for 3 weeks, but at the end of 3 weeks, the symptoms start getting worse. That's telling us that we're giving too little in this particular case, and that we reduce the time interval from maybe 4 weeks to 3 weeks.
So it starts off with weekly injections. And then
it starts off with injections every other day for the first couple of injections, and then they go to 5 days, and then weekly, and then biweekly, and ends up at once a month.
And what's the percentage of pets, and now is this cats and dogs, that undergo desensitization? What percentage improve, and the degree of improvement?
Okay. We see significant to dramatic improvement, again, assuming we've done inhalant and food and done everything, and the owner's been compliant with the schedule, and they've given the injections as indicated. In those cases, we see upwards of 85 and very often into the 90s. Percentage-wise in terms of improvement. And improvement is somewhat subjective, but we define it as a total elimination for the need of corticosteroids and total reduction or elimination for use such as antihistamines in the worst time of the season. Now, if the patient was relying on antihistamines daily and now needs one every couple of weeks, to us, that's significant, and to the owner, that's significant. If the animal was reliant on corticosteroids and was given a tablet of prednisone every day or every other day, and they now don't have to give that, not worry about side effects, then that's significant improvement as far as
that would be spectacular. Yes,
and we see, and like I say, we see that in 85%+ of the cases. Now, in the 15% that don't. Sometimes they can be explained, and sometimes you just have animals that just do not respond. But, for example, I wouldn't start necessarily a 12-year-old dog on hypersensitization because they typically show a slower response. The immune system, just like any other bodily function, tends towards senescence with age and is less likely to mount the immunological response required to render hypersensitization effective. We also find that in the group of patients that are less successful, there's less owner compliance. Now, they give the injection when they remember. Sometimes it's 4 or 5 days late. Sometimes it's a week late. Sometimes they've gone away for a month and not given the injections. Well, then you're setting yourself up for failure. So the most important thing going into it is the owner needs to understand that they do need compliance. It's a very simple thing. The injection takes 30 seconds, and the animal doesn't feel it, and virtually it doesn't flinch, and they're back to normal. And we give these injections at home, and they're very inexpensive when we compare them to other forms of therapy. But again, following all the rules and doing a proper workup and ruling out other issues that could be causing the symptoms that are not necessarily allergy, if we take all of those factors out of the equation, we're in the 90%+ range.
And Dr. Levin, cats and dogs? Because we've been talking mostly dogs.
All right. Well, cats and dogs, the same would apply. I tend to talk more dogs because while allergies exist in cats, they are less frequent. So, you know, the numbers vary according to who you ask, but some people will say that as many as 1 in 3 dogs that come into a clinic have the tendency to develop allergies, where in the case of cats, it's probably more like 1 in 10. So we see a lot less cats being tested than we do dogs just because of the fact that they are less susceptible to allergies. But nonetheless, when they have them, they're just as miserable and just as uncomfortable, but they do respond just equally as well.
Well, Dr. Levin of Spectrum Labs, you have given us some great information of what can cause allergies, the testing, and the treatment. You'd mentioned earlier as we were chatting about the work that you had done in Japan, and this is a time when I know the Japanese people are still reeling from after the horrible tsunami. I understand that right now Spectrum Labs has a donation process that you have going on. Could you explain a little bit about that?
If you go to our website, www.vetallergy.com, you'll find a link to our Facebook page. And anybody that basically clicks on the like in that Facebook page, we will donate a dollar to JEARS, JEARS.org, which stands for the Japan Earthquake Animal Rescue and Support. And right now we're up to several thousand dollars, and we hope for that number to continue increasing. The money gets passed on to this organization, which in turn are helping rescue animals that were either in distress or have lost their human companions and are able to find new homes for them or put them in no-kill shelters.
That is a wonderful service. I think that is awesome that you are doing that along with Spectrum Labs. So we've been talking right now with Dr. Mervyn Levine of Spectrum Labs. You've given us fantastic information. Hopefully people have learned from it. Go to your veterinarian and ask about Spectrum Labs and allergy testing for your pets. Please listen again next week. We'll have more information on how to have you be the best possible pet owner that you can be. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz, and you've been listening to The Pet Doctor. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.